wanted somebody to go back in time with me. This is not a joke. You'll get paid after we get back. Must bring your own weapons. Safety not guaranteed. I have only done this once before. Welcome back to episode 30 of Super Mystery Bros, the podcast that does all the thinking so that you don't have to. My name's Nate, and back with me is a man whose parents for some reason named him Kyle. Kyle, say hi, man.
Hi, man.
And speaking of 30, Ivan's birthday is coming up this week, and he's going to be turning 30. So if any of our dear listeners would like to wish him a happy birthday, you can shoot us an email at supermysterybrospodcast@gmail.com. Or slide into our DMs on Instagram, and Davis and I will make sure that he gets the message.
Ivan's not even 30 yet?
No. He looks way older, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just fucking with you, Ivan. Kyle, do you have anything that you'd like to say?
I'm just really looking forward to doing a new episode with you, Nate. It's been a while since we've done one. You and Ivan have been having all the fun. I'm really looking forward to doing a new episode. I know I just said that twice, but hey, let's go.
So before we begin, I'd like to just thank our producer for doing all the writing and research for this episode. And for those of you who don't know our producer, Davis, he's what scientists refer to as a cybernetic organism. And as a cybernetic organism, he's very interested in the subject of time travel. So here we are, we're covering our first time travel related mystery. I don't know about you, man, but I remember seeing this one on the news when I was a kid, and I never knew any of the details about it, so I'm pretty excited to get into this one.
Yeah, me too.
Real quick, also, I'd like to just note that most of this story has been pieced together and retold by our producer, Davis, based on the testimony of Daniel Barker, the sole witness and survivor of the incident. Sources include court records, an interview with Barbara Walters, and the book he wrote about the incident, which is titled Safety Not Guaranteed. Art, man, are you ready to walk along a razor's edge into the dangerous world of the unknown?
I'm ready, man. Let's hit this full throttle, 88 miles per hour.
The limit. Some would say it exists for a reason. Others would say it exists merely to be pushed. Many throughout history have pushed it to the limit. Some with great success, and others with disastrous consequences. Deep inside the cluttered garage of a humble, lower middle class home in Oak View, California, one man would make history by allegedly building one of, if not the, first time machine in history, before then using it to make the jump back in time, going for the back of beyond, and disappearing into the pages of history like a shadow into the night.
July 1997. The intense Los Angeles heat caused beads of sweat to drip down the face of Daniel Barker, a fresh graduate with a journalism degree from Cal State Northridge. Clutching a wrinkled newspaper, his eyes scanned the help wanted ads. Landing a job in journalism felt like finding a unicorn. To make matters worse, he had just lost his part-time job at the local Radio Shack, leaving him with a looming rent payment and a serious case of broke. Desperation gnawed at him, twisting his stomach into knots. He even resorted to the unthinkable, checking the cushions of not just his own couch, but his friends too, hoping for a stray coin, a forgotten bill, anything to fill the void in his wallet and avoid almost certain eviction. We've all been there. And if you haven't, go fuck yourself.
That's right.
Then, one day, as he was looking through the classified ads with an ever-diminishing sense of optimism, a peculiar entry caught his eye. It read, quote, "Wanted. Somebody to go back in time with me. This is not a joke. P.O. Box 322, Oakview, California, 93022. You'll get paid after we get back. Must bring your own weapons. Safety not guaranteed. I have only done this once before," end quote. Daniel got a real kick out of it. This was just the sort of goofy nonsense he needed to lift his spirits, even if just for a moment. Quote, "I saw this ad in the newspaper, and I was like, no way. This person's gotta be joking. But I was intrigued, and I couldn't stop thinking and wondering who the person behind it might be, end quote, Daniel said during an interview with the late Barbara Walters in 1999. After a few moments of giggling like a naive schoolgirl, a light bulb went off in his head. Perhaps inquiring about this gig, and even meeting and interviewing the person behind the ad, could help him build his journalism resume and lead him toward more steady work in his field.
All right, so let's break this down for a moment. So this guy, Daniel Barker, he's looking through the classified section in his local newspaper, and he sees this ad where somebody's looking for somebody to go back in time with them. Must bring your own weapons, safety not guaranteed. So he gets intrigued and he decides that, hey, this could lead me to bigger things because I've got this journalism degree that I can't use because I don't have any experience. So he wants to go and, you know.
Yeah, he finds himself in the classic fresh college grad conundrum in which he just spent at least 4 years of his life and who knows how many dollars getting a degree. And then he gets out of college with his lame temporary job at Radio Shack and can't find any work to pay off all this student debt that he just got a specific degree in.
Yeah. So anyway, moving on here, curious and compelled. And compelled because he was curious, Daniel wrote to the P.O. Box to express interest in joining this person in their trip back in time. Quote, I wrote a letter to this P.O. Box basically saying that I'd seen the ad and I was interested in going back in time with them. And I also attached a copy of my resume with my phone number on it and asked him to contact me so that I could get some more details about the gig. End quote. Daniel told Barbara Walters. A week crawled by, and the peculiar ad began to fade in Daniel's mind. No reply, no phone call, nothing. It reeked of a prankster with more cash than sense. So back to the daily grind of the classifieds he went. Odd jobs for the neighbors and frequent trips to the pawn shop became his new routine, a meager but honest way to keep the roof over his head. The nearby streetlights cast a gentle orange glow through Daniel's window on an ordinary Tuesday night just before midnight. And Daniel was lying in bed fast asleep. Over a week had passed since his response to the strange ad. And suddenly, the shrill barking of the cordless phone pierced the silence of his shitty apartment. Stumbling around the darkness of the room, he grabbed the phone and answered it. A stern voice then boomed from the receiver. Daniel Barker. Jolted fully awake, Daniel mumbled a nervous confirmation. The voice, laced with paranoia, launched into a rapid-fire interrogation. Are you with the feds? Any government affiliation? Daniel stammered a denial. No, who's this? Skepticism crackled on the other end, but eventually the voice softened. Quote, listen and listen well, because I'm only going to say this once. If you want to go back in time with me, be at the baseball field in Oakview at the corner of Santa Ana and Prospect on Friday the 25th of July at 7 p.m. sharp. Payment will be $500 cash after we get back, end quote. The caller immediately hung up, leaving Daniel wide-eyed in the darkness. He recounted the bizarre encounter later, voice tinged with disbelief, to Barbara Walters on national television. The cryptic job offer, the late-night call, the baseball field rendezvous, it was all stranger than fiction.
Anxiety and a tremor of excitement warred within Daniel. Sleep was a distant prospect as his mind replayed the phone call, a bizarre mix of intrigue and paranoia. 50 miles stretched between his Canoga Park apartment and the baseball field in Oakview. Was it a fool's errand? A mindless ruse by some late-night prankster? Probably. But even a dead end held a faint glimmer of hope. A story, perhaps. A bizarre encounter he could turn into a freelance article, a spark to ignite his stagnant job hunt. A strange meeting just before sunset might be a long shot, but it was a shot nonetheless. So on Friday, July 25th, 1997, Daniel set off sometime in the late afternoon hours in his bronze-colored 1986 Hyundai Excel up the 101 freeway, headed toward Oakview, a town he wasn't familiar with. He even had to stop at a local 7-Eleven to ask for directions. Quote, I was nervous, but I knew if I wanted to make it in journalism, I'd have to put myself into situations that were out of my comfort zone, end quote, Daniel told Barbara Walters. Daniel finally pulled up to the corner of Santa Ana Boulevard and Prospect Street shortly before 7 p.m., where a Little League game was in full swing. Standing at the corner, next to a telephone pole, was a tall, slender man with a white sleeveless t-shirt tucked into his blue jeans, with dirty blonde hair fashioned into a mullet. The two made eye contact as Daniel parked.
Quote, "My first impression of the guy was that he looked like he'd just woken up from a coma he'd been in for the last 10 years. He had a sleeveless Def Leppard t-shirt, and he was wearing jeans that were ripped at the knees, and he had this like, carefully styled flat top mullet haircut. I thought there's no way this guy knew anything about time travel, but I'd already come this far," end quote, Daniel later told Barbara Walters. Daniel hopped out of his car with a nervous smile. He extended his hand toward the man, quote, "Hey, you must be the guy from the ad," end quote. The man chuckled, a dry, humorless sound. Quote, "The one and only. Name's Stuart Fisher, but everyone calls me Stu," end quote. He lived just a couple of blocks over on Burnham Road. Conversation flowed, revealing a 27-year-old Stuart, a college dropout some might call brilliant, but undeniably underachieving. Former classmates of his have described him as somewhat of a savant, and although undiagnosed, probably with some form of high-functioning autism. For years, he toiled away in his garage doing God knows what, his project completely shrouded in secrecy. Daniel, unable to contain his curiosity, pressed Stu about the time travel, but Stu remained enigmatic, muttering something about quote-unquote unfinished business. Apparently, this wasn't his first trip. He explained that on his prior attempt, he had intended to only jump 10 years into the past, but he had spilled some Dr. Pepper on the keypad, which caused a zero key to become sticky, and instead of jumping only 10 years into the past, he was blasted a staggering 100 million years into the past, and that it was a quote-unquote miracle that he was even able to make it back alive. Daniel struggled to stifle a laugh, but Stu's face held an unwavering seriousness. Quote, "Listen, man, this is serious business. If you plan on coming back from 1987 in one piece, you better keep your head or you'll be finished," end quote. The two conversed for a few moments before Stu invited Daniel back to his house. He explained that it was a short distance away on Burnham Road. So, Kyle, I understand that you are vaguely familiar with this area. Can you describe it for us?
Yeah. So where they met up at the ballpark is your typical Southern California looking area. You know, the houses are kind of small, kind of crammed together, right? But they take the short trip across the bridge, across Devil's Gulch into Stu's neighborhood on Burnham Road. And there's farm area not too far behind. So the houses, while they're still kind of old, small, run down, the lot sizes are a lot bigger, you know. So you have a lot more room, detached garage, longer driveways, etc. Other than that, nothing really stands out about these neighborhoods.
Yeah, I wouldn't even call it rural or even semi-rural. It's just kind of like as small of a town as you can get in Southern California.
Yeah. Their conversation crackled with a mix of curiosity and apprehension. After a few tense moments, Stu surprised Daniel with an invitation. Quote, "Place is just a few blocks down. You in?" End quote. He gestured towards Daniel's car. Intrigue outweighed caution. Daniel nodded, a silent agreement to this bizarre turn of events. With Stuart in the passenger seat, they peeled away from the baseball field and on towards Stu's home. Disappointment washed over Daniel as the two pulled up in front of Stuart's house. It was a small, single-story home with a chain-link gate separating the sidewalk from the badly paved driveway, which led to a small, detached garage with a tattered blue tarp hanging down from the entry, the garage door missing from it entirely. The gravel crunched beneath their feet as they walked down the driveway toward the garage. As they ducked under the tarp, Daniel was greeted by its contents. Paint cans, NASCAR memorabilia, random toolboxes, a Knight Rider calendar flipped open to the month of May 1984, and a disturbing number of empty Budweiser cans. This looked less like a mad scientist time travel laboratory and more like a tweaker's den. Front and center sat a car covered in yet another blue tarp. Stu quickly yanked the tarp off in one swift motion, revealing a black 1981 Pontiac Firebird with a gold phoenix painted on the hood. Despite the paint being in poor condition, the car itself appeared to be roadworthy. Still, she was an unmistakable symbol of 1980s American muscle.
Can you describe what a 1981 Firebird is or what it looks like? Because I'm kind of unfamiliar with one.
So a Firebird is your classic transition from the 60s and 70s muscle cars into the 80s. The lines are getting sharper, more aggressive. Like most muscle cars of the time, you have a much longer hood. The cab is set back, giving the car not only better balance, but also allowing for a larger V8 under the hood. If anyone has ever seen Smokey and the Bandit, it is almost the exact same car. And I'm sure even if you haven't, you've seen pictures of this black T-top two-door muscle car with the giant gold Phoenix emblem on the hood, along with gold trim around the headlights in the wheels. It's a very unmistakable car. If you've ever seen it or anything like it, you'd know right off the bat what you're looking at.
That's awesome. I know Smokey and the Bandit. So just picture Smokey and the Bandit, something similar to that. My understanding based on your description.
Yes.
Okay. Understood. So, curiosity piqued, Daniel peered into the Firebird. The interior seemed untouched by time, a standard layout for an 80s muscle car. But two things snagged his attention. In the center console, a small numerical keypad jutted out. Beside it, a small red display glowed with a date, 07-25-1997. A curly phone cord snaked from the display, which plugged directly into the cigarette lighter socket. The back seats, however, were a different story. Gone were the plush cushions, replaced by a chaotic jumble of metallic tubes and a tangle of wires. This, according to Stu, was the heart of his time machine. Daniel couldn't help but raise an eyebrow. The jury was still out on whether Stu was a genius inventor or a master bullshit artist, but the Firebird's customized interior hinted at something far more intriguing than a mere weekend project. In that same interview with Barbara Walters in 1999, Daniel said, quote, "It looked like he, Stu, put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into that car, but at that point I felt like this whole situation was so ridiculous, and I'd been suckered into going over to some psycho's house. I'd already had enough, and honestly, I was just looking for a convenient opportunity to leave," end quote.
Stu soon approached one of his overflowing tool chests. A drawer slid open, revealing not wrenches or screwdrivers, but an AK-47 assault rifle. Quote, "I hope you brought your own weapons," Stu said. "But if not, I've got you covered," end quote. Another drawer slid open, revealing an Uzi submachine gun. The reality of the situation slammed into Daniel. This wasn't some elaborate prank. Stu was armed with heavy firepower and clearly not afraid to use it. Angering this unpredictable man wasn't high on Daniel's to-do list right now. He'd bitten off more than he could chew, and the weight of that realization settled heavy in his stomach. The scene of the dilapidated garage had now morphed into a scene from a cheesy 1980s action movie. Quote, "So," Stu continued, his gaze unwavering, "you in or out," end quote. He gestured towards the Firebird, the keypad blinking faintly in the dim light. Despite the gnawing fear, a spark of curiosity flickered within Daniel. This was a story unlike any he'd ever imagined, a chance to rewrite the definition of journalism. He could even win a Pulitzer Prize for this. Taking a deep breath, he met Stu's gaze.
The two were now past the point of no return. A wave of confidence washed over Daniel. He didn't come here to play it safe. He came here to walk along the razor's edge. He had a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to embark on a journey back in time with a mullet-headed stranger, armed with nothing but a journalist's curiosity and an Uzi submachine gun. Daniel looked him square in the eye and replied, quote, "Let's do this," end quote. So real quick before we move on, let's hear a word from our first unofficial sponsor, Razor Gator.
Only takes a minute to rejuvenate my razor with my Razor Gator. Razor Gator, shaving close and smooth as I reuse my razors using Razor Gator. Razor Gator, rinse, scrape, sweep. It's so neat, keeping clean, scrape, sweep, wipe. It's all right, Razor Gator.
And we're back. Thanks, Razor Gator. With Daniel now on board, Stu had officially hit the wheel and doubled the stakes. Stu nodded approvingly at Daniel's acceptance. Quote, "All right," he said with a stern facial expression. "Let's push it to the limit," end quote. He then strode toward a cluttered workbench and grabbed a ring of keys.
Quote, "Before we go," Stu explained, "I gotta juice up the energy storage system," end quote. With Daniel in tow, Stu trotted toward the rear of the car and slid a nearby jack underneath the ass end. He pumped up the handle until the back tires were lifted several inches above the floor. Quote, "Wait here. This will only take about 10 minutes, tops," end quote. With that, Stu got into the driver's seat, turned the ignition, and began ferociously revving the engine, its tires spinning above the oil-stained concrete floor of the garage. Quote, "Just got to give this baby some juice," end quote, Stu shouted over the engine's roar. 10 minutes. 10 minutes to process this insanity, to weigh the risks, to turn back if he dared. But the engine's furious thrum held a strange allure, a promise of adventure that both terrified and exhilarated Daniel. He was in too deep now. There was no one left to stand in his way except himself.
The air inside the garage grew thick with exhaust fumes, and the Motley Crue cassette tape playing on an old boombox was now completely drowned out by the deafening thunder of the engine. Feeling lightheaded, Daniel decided to clear his head. Desperately searching for a path of escape through the maze of junk littered across the garage floor, his first step was met with disaster. As he squeezed between some cardboard boxes and a precariously placed tool chest, his foot got caught on an empty paint can. With a yelp, Daniel lost his balance, flailing for anything to break his fall. Unfortunately, the closest thing within reach was the rear bumper of the Firebird.
As he made contact with the rear bumper and then the concrete floor of the garage, he was shocked and horrified by what he saw next. The car, precariously balanced on the jack, lurched forward with a sickening metallic groan. The tires made contact with the garage floor, sending the jack skittering across the concrete. With throttle wide open like a bat out of hell, the Firebird shot out of the garage and down the driveway and crashed the gate in a shower of sparks. There was an ear-piercing clash of metal as the chain link burst open upon impact. Then, in a heart-stopping instant, the Firebird was gone, replaced by a blinding flash of bright blue light, along with a thunderous boom that shook the entire vicinity. The force of the explosion blew out transformers across several blocks, plunging the neighborhood into complete darkness. When the ringing in Daniel's ears subsided, an eerie silence had settled, broken only by the cacophony of car alarms and the startled barking of dogs. Dazed and stumbling, Daniel picked himself up, the acrid smell of burnt metal stinging his nostrils. Neighbors, faces pale in the sudden darkness, poked their heads out of windows and doorways, murmuring amongst themselves about a sonic boom from a low-flying fighter jet or a bomb having gone off. All that remained of Stu's wild plan was the twisted wreckage of the chain-link gate, a testament to a time travel attempt having gone spectacularly wrong. There was no sign of Stu nor his prize 1981 Pontiac Firebird. They had both vanished into thin air, leaving behind a bewildered witness and a neighborhood scarred forever. Stu nor his 1981 Pontiac Firebird have ever been seen again.
Wow, man. All right, so let's go over the aftermath here. July 25th, 1997 is now known as the night Oakview went. Just days later, Stewart's mother, Maureen, gave a statement at a press conference regarding the incident. As tears streamed down her cheeks and local news stations crammed into the conference room, she read the following statement. Quote, "Well, everyone in these news teams has had their fun at mine and Stewart's expense. Many of you have spent time trying to smear me and my son. I have received more phone calls and knocks on the door to last a lifetime, and a wave of doubt is now sweeping across the entire county. Truthfully, that is hardly my concern. None of it matters now. At 10:35 p.m. on Friday night, my son Stuart left this world for good. I loved him more than words could say. By the way, he left in a time machine," end quote.
In 2002, Stewart was legally declared dead, but many people believe he's still out there, alive, past the point of no return, stuck in some other place in history. In 2005, the FDA created the Combat Methamphetamine Epidemic Act, which banned over-the-counter sales of cold medicines that included the ingredient pseudoephedrine, requiring them to be sold behind the counter. The act also required consumers to present a photo identification and for stores to keep records of purchasers for at least 2 years. The law limits the amount an individual can purchase in a 30-day period.
Wow, man. All right, so let's go over some of the evidence that he made it and then some of the evidence that he died. So what do you want to go over first, man? Do you want to go over the evidence that he's dead or the evidence that he's alive first?
You know, let's go over the negative evidence that he's dead, and then we'll get to the good stuff after.
Okay. All right. So conventional wisdom and the general scientific consensus is that time travel is only possible in the forward direction, while traveling backwards in time is not possible. This would render critically acclaimed movies such as Terminator and Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure completely silly and unrealistic. According to Einstein's theory of relativity, the rate at which time moves forward in relation to a person or other object can be altered by speed and/or gravity. In other words, not all objects in the universe experience time lapsing at the same rate. For example, as an object approaches the speed of light, it experiences time lapsing at a far slower rate than slower moving objects in the universe. Depending on an object's speed and the force of gravity around it, time can either slow down or speed up relative to other objects, but time can never move in a backwards direction. Famed physicist Stephen Hawking, when questioned on the case of Stuart Fisher back in 1998, stated that he believed it to be unlikely that Stuart made it back in time safely, adding that he and the Firebird likely met with a tragic end, hypothesizing that Stuart and his car may have erupted into, quote, sextillions of subatomic particles, end quote, after the car's reactor was fed with an insufficient amount of energy, which caused a rapid chain reaction and meltdown of its core. All right, man, so can you go over some of the arguments that he actually made it?
Yeah. So, in January of 2006, a user on the website ytmnd.com by the username Scro posted an alleged image of Stewart, which was taken during the time of the American Civil War. In the old black and white image, a man who highly resembles Stewart can be seen holding a rifle with a bayonet with a user-written caption which reads, quote, "This is not a joke, found in my attic," end quote. The man can be seen wearing a military-style cap with a mullet-style haircut.
Yeah, so do you think that that could be him?
I mean, the resemblance is...
it's uncanny.
Very, very uncanny. Like, it looks just like Stu.
The same low-set eyebrows, the same mullet haircut. The, I mean, the even same the exact ears look grin. The same.
Yeah, the same mouth position, eyebrow position. Yeah.
Fucking uncanny. But anyway, why don't you move on?
According to Wikipedia, physicist Dr. Ronald Mallett believes it's quite possible that Stewart actually made it. Quote, "In Einstein's general theory of relativity, both matter and energy can create a gravitational field. This means that the energy of a light beam can produce a gravitational field. My current research considers both the weak and strong gravitational fields produced by a single continuously circulating unidirectional beam of light. In the weak gravitational field of a unidirectional ring laser, it is predicted that a spinning neutral particle, when placed in the ring, is dragged around by the resulting gravitational field," end quote. In a later paper, Mallett argued that at sufficient energies, the circulating laser might produce not just frame dragging, but also closed time-like curves, or CTCs, allowing time travel into the past. Quote, "For the strong gravitational field of a circulating cylinder of light, I have found new exact solutions of the Einstein field equations for the exterior and interior gravitational fields of the light cylinder. The exterior gravitational field is shown to contain closed time-like lines. The presence of closed time-like lines indicates the possibility of time travel into the past. This creates the foundation for a time machine based on a circulating cylinder of light," end quote. Although the exact inner workings of Stewart's time machine never became known, the explosion of blue light as witnessed by Daniel Barker and dozens of local residents is consistent with Mallett's theory. According to Dr. Mallett, if this was the method Stewart used in his time machine, it's quite possible that he survived and became the first person in history to successfully jump back in time. But how far back is difficult, if not impossible, to determine.
That makes sense to me, man.
Yeah, it all seems pretty straightforward. Stewart remains missing to this day. If you have any information on his whereabouts, please contact us at supermysterybrospodcast@gmail.com.
Wow, man. All right, so are you ready to try and solve this sumbitch once and for all?
Oh, I am more than ready.
All right, so first things first, man. Do you think he made it, or do you think that he just vaporized into nothing?
You know what? I think he made it. You know, the Civil War picture is some pretty conclusive evidence that this dude, this exact dude, you know, made time travel into the past. Probably a lot farther than he wanted to go. You know, he only wanted to make it 10 years back. And I think if he did, he probably would have been able to come forward again. But
what if he made it back to 1987, but then when he was in 1987, he decided he wanted to keep going back further into time?
That
was kind of what I was thinking.
That is a distinct possibility. It's really hard to tell what goes on in the mind of a super genius capable of making a time machine out of an 81 Firebird.
I actually think that photograph is him. It looks uncanny. It looks exactly like him. I've stared at the photos over and over. I mean, the ears are the same, like low set eyebrows, the same mullet haircut, even the same hair color. I mean, I know it's a black and white photo, but you can totally tell this guy has light blonde hair. It's uncanny. I can't find any inconsistencies between the two photos.
Yeah, there is no doubt in my mind that that is the same guy.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, so if you could go back in time to any point in history, where would you go and what would you do?
You know, I think I would go back to society's most recent catastrophe, everyone's favorite month and year of March 2020. And I would not put my house up for sale right at that moment. I would wait two or three more years and get a few more bucks out of it.
That was a fucking bad move, man.
Yes, it was.
And you know what? I would go back to 2010 and buy a shitload of Bitcoin. That's what I would do if I had a time machine.
Well, that would definitely scrounge up some more scratch than me waiting to sell my house a couple more years.
I think that would be a better place and time to go.
Yeah. Take me with you.
Yeah. Well, there's also a few other points in time I'd like to go back to. I mean, I'd like to go back to somewhere between like 2004 to 2006 and just fucking start over from that point with the knowledge that I have now. But I don't think that time travel works that way. I think I would go back there as my old self. And I wouldn't be able to start my life over.
Yeah, you'd still be just another teenager stuck in high school.
Yeah. What weapons would you bring?
I would bring probably a .22 and a machete. I mean, it really depends on what
a .22? Why would you bring a .22?
Well, so I think it all depends on what you plan on getting into, right? You know, Stu obviously plan on getting into some shit. Hence an AK and an Uzi, right? Full auto weapons, you know, meant to really lay down the lead, you know. Now, since I have no idea why he's going back, I'm just picturing myself going back just to see if I can. And so you don't know what you're going to run into. So I think a .22 and a machete are the most decent, realistic things for not only survival, but also for hunting and self-defense.
You know what I just thought of is he brought an AK-47 with him, but in that picture in the Civil War, he's just holding a musket, like an old timey rifle. It's like wondering what happened to his AK.
Well, he probably used it for what he needed to use it for and then ran out of ammo. Yeah. You know, because you can get more AK ammo in 1987, but not in the Civil War.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, for me, man, it would kind of depend on the exact time where I was going, like you said. Like, if I was going back to the dinosaur times, I'd I'd have to at least bring some RPGs or some kind of 50 cal machine gun. But if we're talking somewhere where humans are the only threat, I'd probably just bring, you know, one of those, you know, the M16 rifle that he had in Scarface.
Yeah.
The one with the grenade launcher on it, the M203.
Yeah.
That's the one I would bring, man. That thing's sexy.
It is sexy, and it'll get jobs done. It'll get all kinds of jobs done.
When you absolutely need to kill every motherfucker in the room, that's the one I would bring.
You know, I think that quote is for the AK-47.
That's true, but I'm going to use it for the M203 M16.
When you need to kill every motherfucker in the room and destroy every car in the driveway.
All right, we'll go with that. So, yeah, what lessons do you think we can learn from this event?
Don't build your own time machine would be a good one for starters. Or don't answer ads in the paper for random strangers wanting to travel back in time. You know, I know 1970 or 1997 is what was a different time. There weren't as many sketchy people out there. You know, nowadays you can't even go get anything on Craigslist without having a 50-50 chance of someone trying to screw you over. But I think that's even back then, that's a sketchy move to go meet up with a stranger who wants to travel back in time and is telling you to bring weapons.
Yeah, I think that's a red flag, huh?
Yeah.
I think this is a kind of a cautionary tale. Like, I think all of us wish that we could go back in time to fix our mistakes or, you know, to settle the score with people we had beefs with. But building a time machine just isn't the answer.
No.
All right, man. Do you have any apologies, shout outs, or clarifications you'd like to make?
I would like to apologize for anyone who owns a 1981 Firebird to this day. It's the shittiest Firebird. I know it's the shittiest Firebird because that was the year they stopped making them. And also, if you drive one, everyone thinks you're a mullet rocking douchebag.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself, man. Quick shout out to Razor Gator. I'm not sure exactly what it does, but just go buy that shit. I'd also like to give a shout out to our sources for tonight's episode, which was our producer Davis, the website ytmnd.com, and my ass. Thirdly, I'd like to apologize to our listeners, because if you believe this story all the way to the end, you're nothing but a mere guppy chomping down on the baited hooks of Russian bots and the mainstream fake news media elites. All right, man, I think it's time to get out of here. Like sands through the hourglass, so too are the minutes of our podcast. But don't fret, dear listener. We'll be back again to breathe new life into a real mystery next time.
Remember, folks, the truth is out there, somewhere in the ether. And through our powers combined, we'll solve that sumbitch once and for all.
This is April Fools. Wow, man. All right, so let's go over the aftermath here. July 25th, 1997 is now known as the night Oakview went... Just days later, Stewart's mother, Maureen, gave a statement at a press conference regarding the incident. As tears streamed down her cheeks and local news stations crammed into the conference room, she read the following statement. Quote, "Well, everyone in these news teams has had their fun at mine and Stewart's expense. Many of you have spent time trying to smear me and my son. I have received more phone calls and knocks on the door to last a lifetime, and a wave of doubt is now sweeping across the entire county. Truthfully, that is hardly my concern. None of it matters now. At 10:35 p.m. on Friday night, my son Stewart left this world for good. I loved him more than words could say. By the way, he left in a time machine." And
that's a little ridiculous at the end there. "By the way, he left in a time machine." I'm glad we're getting the laughs out now.
Yeah.
In 2005, the FDA created the Combat Methamphetamine Epidemic Act. Or CME for short. which banned over-the-counter sales of cold medicines that included the ingredient pseudoephedrine, requiring them to be sold behind the counter.